first show of 2025 here on Canuck Central. Satyar Shah with Vic Nizar in for Dan Riccio here on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network, coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? And as always, get in touch with us on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And of course, this hour of Canuck Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints off Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Bic, what's going on, man? How you feeling? How's 2025 treating you 48 hours in?
It's been the best year ever. Nothing has gone wrong yet.
And nothing's changed either.
That's fun with stats. Like 100% of my year has been awesome.
100%, it's been fantastic. You know the best thing about 2025? The Canucks are undefeated so far.
Yeah.
In 2025.
Can't fight with logic.
Hashtag facts only. Show is produced today by Elon Shark and Arash, who is behind the glass here for us on Sportsnet 650. And we have a lot to get to. We are going to get to Landon Ferraro, who we usually have on every Thursday to chat about your Vancouver Canucks. Plus, Shane O'Brien is going to join us. And maybe you may have heard on Missing Curfew yesterday, there was a clip going around from his co-host, former Canuck, Brad Richardson, had a comment or two, which we'll get to coming up in a second. So all that's coming up on the show. Plus, overrated, underrated on a Thursday, because we had no show on Wednesday, it being New Year's Day. So if you have any more questions or topics for us to debate for overrated, underrated, we're doing that at 5:30, the final segment, before we head into the pregame show, Canucks and Kraken. So we have a lot to get to, so let's start it off right away.
Welcome to the Open.
Mark! That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
It is the Open, where we give you our take on the latest on the Vancouver Canucks. And I really wanted to start 2025, Bic, with a different topic. I wanted to move forward. And instead, 2025 has very much been Groundhog's Day. And you know what? It's one of those things where here locally in Vancouver, of course, we get accused of fanning the flames when it comes to discourse around the team and rumors and things like that. But I wake up today, the first thing I see is a comment from Elliot Friedman on the latest with the Vancouver Canucks and JT Miller and Elias Pettersson, the storyline that will not die. So, okay, I look over that. Fine. I try to move on with my day. And then Frank Saravalli. Oh, okay. I realize he also spoke to Halford and Brough today. So I listened to that. Okay. Well, another take on JT Miller and Pettersson. He's been pretty steadfast. Obviously, yesterday.
And some things Frank has said on this show as
well. Yes, of course.
As
we'll
he joins you guys.
In a little bit. Even Doyle was on Kipper and Bourne talking about the whole JT Miller and Pettersson thing. Bo Horvat. I was trying to read an article online, and then all of a sudden, a Bo Horvat article pops up, and he's commenting on JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. No matter where I go and where I turn, Elias Pettersson and JT Miller look at my face. So I decided to, you know what, let me go see what the betting odds are saying about the game tonight between the Vancouver Canucks and the Seattle Kraken. And there I see betting odds for the Canucks to potentially trade JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, neither or both. So now I'm staring at betting odds, courtesy of Play Now, for trades that may or may not happen around Elias Pettersson and JT Miller. I just can't get away from the story.
It has gone full-blown across the league.
I can't even go pick up honey without being reminded of Elias Pettersson.
I walked with Sat at Whole Foods, and we're walking, and there was a jar or a canister of honey, and it was I guess the brand was Elias. And I was like, oh, look, even the honey's on sale.
Is that honey sweet, at least?
Is that the Canucks pro-scouting process? Be like, hey, what's on sale right now at the supermarkets? Is it Miller Lights or is it Elias Honey?
Yeah, so honestly, like, I don't think we can move on from this Elias Pettersson, JT Miller story until one of two things happen. One, a trade happens, but maybe the more hopeful one and the realistic one is this team starts winning hockey games. And when you start winning hockey games, then these things don't start popping up as much.
Or I'll present the door number three, the old Monty Hall problem here. Ooh, what's behind door number three? And I think this is stupid, but like both come out and speak to media They're like, look, I don't know what you guys are talking about here. There's no deal. Sure, there's been some ruffled feathers, but like, this isn't impacting the performance, right? Because that's what this is about, ultimately. Like, is if the theory of this is like, it's been so bad, it's impacting performances, then you got to come out and be like, look, this is not a thing. But your other two examples, absolutely. Eventually, this leads to a trade, which, again, I'm shaking my head as I'm speaking about this. They start winning, and people and the team, everyone can put aside egos and pull it. The fans, media, team are all pulling on the same rope of like, wow, the team is winning. And you start talking about winning.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, hey, people talk about how, yeah, it's nothing new. We know that JT and Patterson haven't been best friends. They've both acknowledged it in the past. They've also mentioned how they feel like they've worked on it and improved, their words. And most recently, when both guys commented on it, we saw JT hold court and offer to bring Patterson out to show that they are fine. Patterson called it a bunch of, you know what? The speculation around these two guys. So that's the word from those players, right? Now, the stuff that's come out today, I think at this point, most people have heard what has been said. And I think, obviously, the Brad Richardson one was the one that got people to pay more attention, because here's a former teammate
that's
going
a player
on
record, right? That I don't want to say changes the story, but it advances the story.
It creates another talking point, mm-hmm. I would say, right? Now, what Brad Richardson is citing, and you know what? Before we go in depth into this or talk more about this, I mean, we have more things to get to as well. It's not going to just be about
it's a game
this.
Day.
It's a lot to get to. Like we said, we have a lot we want to cover, even in this first segment here around the Canucks. But here is what Brad Richardson, and we'll have Shane O'Brien on later, had to say about the JT Miller-Elias Pettersson relationship on Missing Curfew podcast.
Let me tell you this, and I'll be honestly super honest with you, and I've had this, and I was in that dressing room with those guys. I love JT. Love him. He's like an animal. But I even told him, I said, hey, you're too hard on this kid.
Yeah?
You're too hard on him. And I said, you're saying exactly what I think. But he's a kid that doesn't take, when you're on him, he's going to shut it down. I told him, like, hey, you're going to lose this guy if you keep doing it.
Well, you were
That's what I said to him. And JT is, he's the man. But there is a lot of tension. And something's going to give, I guarantee you. And I'm not saying you have to love every guy on your team. It helps. But something's going to give there. So we'll see.
There comes some pressure, right? And
no, 100%.
Richie, you know, I love JT Miller. And if there is a problem between the two of them, if I'm the GM, I'm trading Pettersson. I don't care what anyone says in Vancouver. I love JT Miller.
So that is Brad Richardson, and you heard Shane O'Brien also chiming in with his opinion on it. And we'll get to Shane coming up later.
We're going to talk to OB later today.
He'll have a chance to offer his opinion on it as well. Now, on the Brad Richardson point, because he was a teammate here for 17 games at the end of the 2021-2022 season, a year where Bruce Boudreau had taken over and the Canucks had played better down the stretch, but obviously not enough to make the postseason, of course. And it wasn't until the next season that Bruce Boudreau got fired and replaced by Rick Tocchet. And I would say, in fairness, about the context, at 2021-2022, was this perhaps the height of the discord between JT and Pettersson? It's probably around the time when this stuff was out there a bit more,
sure.
Right? And both players had acknowledged and talked about it, and we had heard that, you know, there was some managing going on with the team when it came to their relationship. Was that something new, however, as in terms of where they are today? Like, I'm not disputing anything that Richardson said, but it's also something that we kind of knew. Like, he's not saying anything we didn't know. Or again, the players themselves have acknowledged and talked about this, how they themselves, yes, it's been prickly at times, but they've worked at it. Like, this is years ago, both guys have commented on it.
And to Elias Pettersson's credit, what happened the year after JT Richardson or Brad Richardson was on the team? Had went out in 100 point season. Again, so that's why I go back to, like, is this something that's actually impacting the play on the ice, or are both guys simultaneously in some struggles right now, independent of their relationship, right? I'm here for that conversation as well. I think that has to be recognized as well, that, you know, Pettersson's struggles predate the season. JT feels like he's back to form of two seasons ago, mm-hmm. which can be an effective point producer, but are you overall, like he was last year, a territorially dominant player and effective at both ends of the rink?
Yeah.
Right now, he looks like he did 2 years ago or three seasons ago. That's why, like, well, what hangs in the balance here? And you can get to situations of, as the conversation's blown up out external to the city here, people start bringing up trade ideas and all these things. If it's deliberately impacting performance, then, like, there's a huge problem here. I still don't believe that. You still don't believe that. You know, I know Frank has been on these shows and downplayed it and still waiting for, like, okay, well, what's the thing here? What's the thing that's prevented them from having success? If it is the relationship, it's like, man, we got bigger issues here.
So what I've been saying for the better part of a month now is, obviously, this relationship has needed some level of managing. That can get tiresome, right? At the same time, they want to keep both players. They want to make it work with both players because they understand that today they can't make deals that are beneficial to the team if they're moving either player, and they want to make it work. If that doesn't work, at some point, you need to reach a breaking point. That's what Elliot said today as well, and they got people kind of talking about the situation, and he mentioned how maybe Hughes and Tockett are getting a bit tired of it as well, but
sure.
It goes back to what I was saying. It's managing it does get a little bit tiresome, but to me, it just comes down to results again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if this team starts winning and getting results, then everything is going to change, right? And as far as some of the other stuff out there, we saw Nick Kiprios had an article in the Star, and he mentioned, again, another report. I mean, it's like...
Paul Bissonnette on Spin Chicklets.
Yeah, on him too. Like, that's like, what, seven sources now we cited?
Within 24 hours. People that have, like, again, for people like, why you guys keep talking about this? First of all, the GM has come out and did a Q&A last week. This week, I've lost concept of time with the holidays and everything like that. He's come out on record to talk about this. Now you throw in, you know, seven different people essentially talking about it today, external to this market. So, like, this is, I don't want to say crisis, but this is, like, spread to every facet of the league.
If things get like this, it becomes such a big story, right? And the team doesn't start winning and turning around. Do you get to a point where you have to do something? And, you know, Bissonnette mentioned the New York Rangers. We keep hearing the Rangers circling around the Vancouver Canucks. I've heard it being downplayed, and I've mentioned this before from people with the team when I ask about, you know, the Rangers and them, and that they haven't really had too many in-depth discussions. It hasn't gotten that far. Obviously, we know a couple of years ago there was interest in a trade with JT, and that never happened. The Canucks ended up extending JT Miller. But the stuff that we've kind of heard again today, and Dhaliwal was on Kipper and Bourne this afternoon, and he mentioned that last time the Canucks were asking for guys like Lafreniere, we know they also asked about guys like Braden Schneider, and he mentions maybe Keandre Miller is not a player that they're after as far as a player that they would look to move. To me, that's also getting ahead of things as far as, are the Canucks in a point right now where they're even moving JT? And because he has a no trade clause, and not to say he wouldn't...
No movement clause. No,
It's a situation the player also controls, right? So I think there are a lot of things here. And right now we know, and Dhaliwal's mentioned this, I've mentioned this, I mentioned the team doesn't want to trade him, at least not so far. Dhaliwal's mentioned that the player does not want to be traded. So, I mean, those are the facts as we stand.
Yes.
So something's going to have to change. There has to be some sort of movement beyond that here,
but
where
I
that has to happen.
I do want to go down a road, right? Let's do this hypothetically, and let's have some fun with it. Let's say you do get to a spot where, again, Kipper mentioned major shakeup and all these things. And I do subscribe to the philosophy, and I think a lot of people would. If you're in a trade and you're trading the best player, you're going to lose that trade.
Yes.
That's common practice, and it's widely understood. Let's try to figure out a scenario, though. Where, like, is there actually a way to come out ahead in this scenario?
Well, I mean, so, okay, what do you, if you're moving one of your two top centers, right? Like, whether it's Pettersson or JT, if you're making a move, and we know even Alvin said, whether it was tongue in cheek or not, there's always a chance. But
sure,
it also depends on, there's always a price.
He also commented on lateral moves.
Of course.
So,
right.
Again, I've seen texts already come in today. Well, what about Zibanejad? I know it was mentioned on Kipper and Bourne today as well. Why don't you do, like, the money works. That, to me, like, that screams lateral move.
Yeah,
you're paying more because he makes 8.5 for the same age, basically. And, like, that, to me, screams lateral move. I don't think you're just doing a move for the sake of doing a move.
Yeah.
But if you're making a move, like, what's the way to try to actually win it?
Can you get a defenseman and a center? I don't know if you can for JT because of his age, right? And, you know, if this stuff is out there now too, and because he's had a few issues in other markets, is his value even further depressed? Like, we talk about Alvin coming out and talking about Pettersson and, mm-hmm. and putting him on the spotlight and how that doesn't really help his trade value. So if you're trying to trade him, you probably don't do that. It's more about getting the player going, so to speak. What is JT's trade value in the middle of all this? Is it the Rangers thing the one to look at? Because they're a team that's desperate. The reports mm-hmm. are out that Drury really likes JT Miller.
It's desperation matched with admiration.
Yeah, and the question is, how much of that has truly been expressed to the Canucks? And that's what, you know, I haven't had confirmed to that extent yet. And maybe it's semantics because it comes down to, well, yeah, well, sure. Give us something to consider, right? Yeah. And maybe if they do, maybe you will consider it a bit further. But I'm just not sure, are you getting, for JT himself, forget about sweetening the pot, so to speak, what are you getting for him? Like, let's say with the New York Rangers. Mm-hmm. So you're not doing Zibanejad, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not even sure the Canucks would be interested in doing that, right? I'm not sure they would be. Like, what's a trade that would make you want to say okay to a JT move to New York?
Like, at bare minimum for me, the guy that would need to be involved is, like, a Keandre Miller. Involved. I'm not saying it's one for one, but, like, you now get to the stage of him being involved. Like, that to me is at least an intriguing piece, solves a problem, is a credible top four guy, and that adds to the depth required on defense. He's got to be involved. But this strikes me as, like, a fantasy footballer's dream here. Because I'm sure every person is like, you know what we need? We need to make this trade bigger. And so I think when you're starting to map out like the structure of a positive trade, I don't think you're winning with the best player available. Because if you're downgrading from Miller to any, like a lot of centers that might be available, that's a downgrade.
Yeah, like even with the range, like say you get Filip Hedl, that's a huge downgrade.
That's a huge downgrade. I don't want to live in that reality. But do you then have to try to add more from the Canucks side? And say, hey, here's some other roster players. Here's some other, like, you're getting the big reward. Like, you're getting the biggest piece in the deal. But we want to include these other pieces to improve on that.
Well, how much of a needle does Hoglander move truly, though? Like, that's the guy I think about, right?
But the reward, the cherry on top is JT Miller.
Right.
I'll reference a movie I know you and I love. The Big Short. You remember there's that moment he's like, I get the cherry and I get the sprinkles, but you get the ice cream, the banana, everything, the hot fudge. Somebody's getting all the fun stuff. But the Canucks, like, they're giving up JT, but they get another couple of rewards on top of it.
Yeah, that's a good one too. I mean, it's okay. The only trade that interests me with the Rangers, obviously there are players that I really like, but I don't think is realistic, right? Is Lafreniere realistic?
It's
a winger again, for a center. You're getting a winger for a center.
I like the player, man. I like the player. But I'd be a bit worried about, like, the best case scenario here is, like, you're trading a number one center for a, like, worst case scenario, I guess, a second line winger.
Yeah, I think the Canucks have to, if you're moving one of your top two centers, you have to come back with at least a center. You just have to. And then the other thing is, to make it worthwhile, you need to find a top four defenseman.
That's
for instance,
yeah.
Right? What about Trocheck and Keandre Miller?
With like JT in pieces.
Say JT and Hoglander.
So that I'm like more interested. Because again, that's like structuring it in a way that, again, it's utilizing the surplus of what you have. The surplus is you have two number one centers. That's like some teams only have a one. So you're downgrading to a real number two center to get a real number four or a top four D-man.
Yeah, but again, here's the other thing. So these are things that are appealing to us. If the Canucks don't have interest in Keandre Miller, then it doesn't matter.
Changes the picture, sure, certainly.
We're doing this to illuminate how complicated it is mm-hmm. to make this type of trade in season. And that's why the stuff that's been out there with the team, I think it's more about trying to get these guys going. Because mm-hmm. the best case scenario for this hockey team isn't to trade one of them. It's not to trade both. It's for both guys to figure it out.
That's why this thing's so dumb.
Like, we even mentioned Trocheck. He's a 32-year-old center who's got like 4 or 5 years left, right?
Yeah.
And even if you saw Zibanejad, he's 31. He has his struggles. He has a big contract. People like Keandre Miller, but he's struggled. He's looking to get a big contract. These are all big, risky players we're talking about here, right? Like, they have talent. They're good. But I don't know if you're necessarily better moving these guys. That's why ultimately, and that goes back to what Elias was saying today, it's like, as much as, yes, they know, and I mentioned this yesterday too, that the team understands what the prices are for their players, and they know they're not winning a trade right now. And unless that changes, the best case scenario for this team is to make it work with the players they have. And do they have it within them to figure this out? And I think it comes down to, can you get the best out of JT and Pettersson together? And if they do show they can do that when Pettersson comes back and hopefully he's healthy, then these things will be quieted down and put to bed finally. But if it doesn't happen, we'll be back to talk about these same things over and over again, just like it's Groundhog's Day.
This stretch of games when Elias Pettersson makes his return, and we talked about this last postgame show, outside of the context of this scenario here of the relationship and all these things, it's even just how Patrick Alvin should be wanting to plot out his plan prior to the trade deadline. It's like once they get these guys back, Pettersson and Hughes, they better hit the ground running fast. Mm-hmm. A, to just quiet the noise, but B, to just give yourself an honest assessment of what this team can be and what you actually need to go target. And look, it's still going to be the same thing, top four D-man, but if you can do it with a clear lens of, oh, okay, now everyone's slotted in, we're healthy enough, we get an idea of what it is. Because when they have been in the lineup, it's been inconsistent.
Yeah.
So play to your potential and actually show what this team actually is.
100%. I'm with you on that. And we have a lot of reaction on this on text inboxes. You would imagine. Jason Cochran says, I think this talk is nonsense. 95% of teams in NHL will be in a tailspin like the Canucks after losing their top two D-men. Be patient and stay the course, and we will be fine. And hey, that's all fair, but this stuff was also being talked about before Hughes and Pettersson got hurt. I mean, Elliot did a lot of reporting on it, and a lot of fires started based on a lot of discussions going on outside of Vancouver, and that's where this stuff started. And this was before both guys were missing from the lineup as well. But hopefully, again, like, the best case scenario for me is to see this team winning hockey games and getting the best out of both these two hockey players. And, you know, as far as the Canucks Central roundup, let's get to that before we get out here quickly. No Hughes, no Pettersson tonight, of course, in Seattle. Game time decision on the defense. So could we see Guillaume Brisebois draw back in? And if he draws in, who comes out? And I have a hard time seeing Carson Soucy or Derek Forbort coming out big. So does that mean if Brisebois comes out, Eric Brandstrom is the guy?
Man, it's going to be if someone's taken out, it's going to be a little shot all of a sudden that, like, we've gone through a number of D-men here. And we talked about this last post game, and all the talks of, like, these guys can't play and someone's got to come out. It's like, yeah, I don't know if the options are better. And so if a change is made, I'll give Rick Tocchet some credit about it, because, you know, his philosophy of, like, like, these are the guys. If he's willing to make a change, and that's admission of, like, hey, this isn't working right now, maybe we have to change our philosophy. And if that means even Christopher Lannan's got to come up and you completely change it, then okay. But, like, it's a step now. Like, again, I'm not even the biggest Brandstrom fan, but if we're now to Brisebois, like, that's... We're running out of ideas here.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, though, I see a lot of people getting upset about Brandstrom, and they show up some of the player cards and how his differentials look good. Look at his numbers the last little bit, and they haven't been good. Earlier this year, in more sheltered minutes, they were better with more injuries. He's had a lot of struggles. He has a tough time. I don't know. I mean, I have a hard time getting worked up over anybody.
He's had some icings, and even like his first touch on the puck last game, he misses two players.
Yeah, I mean, these guys...
Your effectiveness is rooted in moving the puck in your own zone.
Yeah, I mean...
And when you're not under pressure, you miss two players.
If you watch the way he struggled moving the puck and rushing the puck the past few games, that's why it doesn't resonate with me, the talk about having to keep him in. Like, he's been in, and he's not really making that big of a difference, but that's where the Canucks find themselves with their defense, and Thatcher Demko getting the start between the pipes. All right, we'll get into more of the pregame talk coming up at 6 when the Canucks... we start the Canucks talk about the game with the Seattle Kraken happening down in Seattle. But coming up next, we have our good friend Landon Ferraro joining us, and that's here on Sportsnet 650.